Welcome to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, President Trump came to Florida this week to kick off his bid to return to the White House in 2020. On Tuesday in Orlando, he announced his reelection campaign.
I'm thrilled to be back in my second home. That's what it is. It's my second home. In many cases, I think I could say it's my first home. You want to know the truth? It's the great state of Florida.
The president planted himself right in the middle of one of the most important swing states for presidential politics. His speech hit on familiar themes, Melissa: hard line on immigration, record low unemployment nationwide, and railing against the Mueller investigation.
That's right, Tom. It was no surprise the president chose Florida for this campaign kickoff. Florida, of course, helped tip the Electoral College to Trump in 2016. This Friday on the Florida Roundup for the full hour, we are focusing on Florida, its importance in 2020, and the president's reelection efforts. In a few minutes, we'll take your phone calls and tweets. Give us a call here on the Florida Roundup at 305-995-1800. Tweet us at Florida Roundup and let us know, did you vote for President Trump 4 years or 3 years ago? Will you vote for him again this next time or not? And what issues will drive your vote in 2020? Your calls and tweets in a moment. In a few minutes, we'll also hear from an editor at the Orlando Sentinel. He'll explain why his paper is endorsing anyone but Trump in 2020.
But first, Susie Wiles. She was the chief Florida strategist for Donald Trump in 2016 and is an advisor to the president's 2020 reelection campaign. Susie, welcome back to Florida Roundup and Florida Public Radio. Nice to have you again.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Let's talk about turnout and voting. There are 200,000 more registered Democrats in Florida than Republican voters as of the last count last month. Can the president win Florida again without swing voters?
Swing voters are in every election cycle. Swing voters are the target for both parties. No different here. So, no. But neither can whoever the Democratic opponent is.
So what are the messages that you think will appeal to those swing voters, the more than 3 million registered Floridians that are registered with no party affiliation?
It's the fastest growing piece of the electorate. Mm-hmm. And so speaking to them about what we used to call pocketbook or breadbasket issues is I'm sure what the strategy will be as we go into closer to Election Day, when people really begin to focus. The economy, should it still be strong, and I think the Trump camp hopes it will be. National security, the robustness of the economy will be, I think, the determining factor as to what the significant themes will be.
You talk about
for swing voters and all voters.
You talk about national security. Certainly, that's in the headlines today. We are learning that the president just acknowledged that, in his words, the military, the U.S. military, was cocked and loaded for retaliatory strikes in Iran before he decided against those measures, according to his assessment of the process. How does that play for Florida voters as we look certainly at more regional instability in Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba?
I think the president has demonstrated a reluctance to go to war. He may be a little different than Republican presidents of the recent past. Not interested in these prolonged conflicts around the globe. This probably is no different. He certainly is prepared to do it. He has reinvigorated our military, but it is certainly not his first choice, and I think today is just a reflection of that.
Let me talk to you a little bit about kind of how the president is positioning himself, how he has positioned himself in anticipation of the 2020 reelection campaign. On Tuesday in Orlando, this is how the president described the opposing political party.
Our radical Democrat opponents are driven by hatred, prejudice, and rage. They want to destroy you, and they want to destroy our country as we know it. Not acceptable. It's not going to happen.
Susie, what do you think he means by saying the opposing political party, the Democrats in this case, want to destroy the country?
I think we have to acknowledge that hyperbole on both sides of the aisle is just sort of the currency, rhetorical currency, no different here. But I do think you'll see a line in the sand. The words socialism, the words, you know, that you hear him use, he'll continue. He ran the first time on Make America Great, mm-hmm. and he'll do it again.
But do you think he will continue to say that the political party that he is opposing is going to destroy the country or wants to destroy the country, use that active of language? And are you hearing that same thing coming from Democratic opponents, that the Republicans or the president is destroying the country?
Yes and yes.
Democratic side is using that kind of verbiage?
You hear it from virtually everybody, and they usually more personalize it to Donald Trump than all mm-hmm. Republicans. We've got debates coming up. Mm-hmm. Let's watch and see. But I think you'll hear a lot of it.
According to the Los Angeles Times, in the first 6 months of this year, the campaign spent almost $750,000 on Facebook ads targeting Floridians. How will the campaign deal with the threat of misinformation and manipulation from social media, especially from social media coming from foreign interests such as Russians?
Sure. Well, you're outside of my expertise right now, but I know that a significant investment in that large dollar number has been sort of working to prevent what we think happened last time. It happened in Florida, mm-hmm. Other places too, but certainly here. And so, as I say, you're outside of my expertise, but I know it's a great concern to the campaign.
Sure. So how is the campaign thinking about, or will it even try to counteract the kind of Russian trolling, for instance, that we saw in 2016 from fake accounts or fake user groups on Facebook, or even these Russian foreign interests buying online ads in support of then-candidate President Trump in 2016?
Again, I don't know the specifics. I know it's a concern. I know they've spent time and money to guard against it, and will continue to do that. Not just Russian, but any bad actor that would seek to influence one way or another.
Will the president accept the results of the 2020 election, even if he doesn't win?
I'm sure he will.
The reason I ask is, you know, that he had alluded to perhaps not accepting the results of the 2016 election. And as he's been president, he's talked about perhaps serving more than two terms. In April, the president accepted a small statue at a Wounded Warrior Project ceremony at the White House. This is what he said then.
Well, this is really beautiful. This will find a permanent place, at least for 6 years, in the Oval Office. Is that okay? I was going to joke, General, and say at least for 10 or 14 years, but we would cause bedlam if I said it.
On Sunday, he kind of continued this line, Susie. He tweeted, quote, "The good news is that at the end of 6 years, after America has been made great again, and after I leave the beautiful White House, do you think the people would demand that I stay longer?" And then he went on. Do you think he should stop making these kinds of comments, even if they are heard in a humorous fashion by some?
He loves being provocative. I wish I was sometimes in control of his speeches and his Twitter. I'm not. I'm sure I'm not the only person that wishes that. But he speaks what's in his mind and, as I say, enjoys being a provocateur.
Do you think this is just provocative, or do you think there is an ounce of truth behind what he is saying here?
No, I think it's provocative.
If he wins in 2020, would you recommend that he pledge during the election to step down voluntarily when that term ends?
Sure, if that becomes a serious, you know, consideration, of course.
Susie, we appreciate your time today. Susie Wiles, an advisor to the Trump campaign 2020 in Florida. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the same day the president came to Orlando, the hometown newspaper there, the Orlando Sentinel, published an editorial announcing it would not endorse the president for another term. The Sentinel dubbed what it calls Trump's assault on truth as the great casualty of this presidency. By the way, the Orlando Sentinel editorial board did endorse Hillary Clinton in 2016 and Mitt Romney in 2012. We'll get to your calls in a moment about that here on the Florida Roundup at 305-995-1800. Already getting your tweets. Right now, let's go to Mike Lafferty. He's the opinion editor at the Orlando Sentinel, and he joins us now from WMFE Studios. You know, Mike, we're about 500 days out from this election. You timed this op-ed to run the same day the president appeared in your hometown, Orlando. Were you just seeking to make a splash?
Well, no, we were not just to make a splash. What we were trying to do was to make a statement with the president in town and with so much attention turned toward Orlando about where we stood at this point in his presidency. And where we stood was in a place where we could not see a path toward endorsing him in 2020. So it seemed like a pretty ideal time to just say so.
Your focus in the editorial more than anything else was on the president's many misstatements and outright lies.
Yes.
You write, this is disqualifying. Why do you think millions of voters who support this president disagree or just discount the many falsehoods and outright lies he has told?
You know, it is a great question you're asking, and it is one I cannot even begin to explain. You know, we mothers and fathers around the country, one of the first things you teach your children is you don't lie. You teach them that there are consequences for lying, and you teach them that it's morally wrong. It's one of the first things you do. And so it really is a question you ask that is beyond my capacity to answer, why so many mothers and fathers out there think that it is okay to tell so many lies on such a regular basis and to be completely unrepentant about it. I don't know the answer to that.
Meanwhile, let me ask you about this. A Pew Research Center survey back in 2008 during that election found that 70% of the voters out there say newspaper endorsements make no difference in how they decide to vote. How much does that concern you? Are you concerned newspapers are losing influence over the political discourse?
Oh, I have no doubt that newspapers have lost the influence that they used to have over over politics, at least through the editorial pages. I'm not delusional about that. I do think there's an appetite among some of our readers to hear what we have to say about different issues, and you know, we still believe there's a place for that in the newspaper. You know, I've told people before that I believe that when it comes to things like editorials, endorsements, you know, we can move the needle, particularly on local races. Some, I don't really pretend to think that we can move it very much on something like presidential race, especially this one where so many people have their minds made up one way or the other. But, you know, I think it's still important for us to say what we think about things as consequential as the presidency.
And I'm quoting here, you wrote, after 2.5 years, we've seen enough. Enough of the chaos, the division, the schoolyard insults, the self-aggrandizement, the corruption, and especially the lies. You go on to say the president has been conducting a war on decency, and you say the commander-in-chief has diminished our standing in the world. Let me ask you then how you react to the president announcing he had ordered airstrikes on Iran and then pulled back at the last minute.
Well, to be honest, I've been pretty busy this morning and I haven't had much of a chance to read up on the circumstances of that. So I would feel a little out of place to render some sort of
judgment. Sure. Then how then do you see this president diminishing America's standing in the world?
Well, sure. I gave the example in the editorial of in 2018 when the president was in Helsinki, stood next to Vladimir Putin, was asked about Russian interference, and in essence, not really in essence, very directly, sided with the leader of Russia. Which is not a friend of ours, over the intelligence community of the United States. I believe that is the type of thing that diminishes our standing in the world.
Meanwhile, let me ask you as well, the Sentinel, more often than not, has endorsed Republicans for president rather than Democrats. Was there any internal debate or dissension over this decision to come out so early in the hustings, so to speak, and come out so vocally against Donald Trump?
You know, one person on the editorial board was concerned about doing it this early, and we talked it through But, you know, in the end, we got to that point where in the editorial where it said, we've seen enough. You know, and I should say that toward the end of the editorial, of course, we left the door open a crack, somewhat facetiously, in referencing that if the president cured cancer, perhaps we'd change our minds. But also, more realistically, that if he actually changed the way that he conducted himself and conducted the presidency, then, yeah, I think we could take another look at it. But I don't think people who either support the president or don't support the president really think that there's much chance of such a change of character at this late in the game.
And certainly voters are dug in. Perceptions are pretty deeply held on both sides right now. You receive national attention for this op-ed in the Sentinel, but what about your hometown readers in Central Florida? What kind of reaction did you get from your readers when this was published?
Well, it was a strong reaction, I can tell you that, more than I've seen. I was previously editorial page editor and recently came back into the job, more than I've seen for anything that we've written before. We got a very strong reaction in 2012 when we endorsed Mitt Romney, and we endorsed him primarily because of financial and budget issues that we thought were lacking in the first term of the Obama administration. But this time around, it was really strong. And I can give you some numbers if you want.
Sure.
We got about 200 phone calls. The phone calls were basically 2-1 against the editorial. We got about a total through all the letters to the editor inbox and other people's inboxes, probably close to 1,000 emails. And, you know, everybody who got them, I got about 100 in my email box, and we got about 650 or so in our letters to the editor email box. Those were really 50-50. You know, there were so many people who were so angry about it and just furious. Some of the comments are really just I'm not able to repeat. And then other people just seemed so grateful. The theme there was that, you know, we articulated what they've been feeling now for the last couple of years, and they were grateful for that. But it was pretty evenly split.
Evenly split. In the minute or so we have left, would you endorse another Republican candidate should someone step forward to primary Donald Trump?
Oh, sure. We made that point in the editorial. You know, this is I heard several people say anybody but Trump, and I guess there's some truth to that, but you know, if a person like Mitt Romney stepped up again, you know, he's a man of integrity. John Kasich, we gave that example in the editorial. Those are the kind of people that we'd be happy to give a look to. And, you know, the other option that we have, which is a real option, depending on who the Democrats select, is to not endorse, which is what the Sentinel did in 1980 when Ronald Reagan ran against Jimmy Carter.
Wow, going all the way back to 1980 to not weigh in. That's interesting history there. Mike Lafferty, opinion editor at the Orlando Sentinel, with us from WMFE Studios in Orlando. Thanks for joining the Florida Roundup.
You're very welcome.
Lots of calls and tweets coming into the show as President Trump kicks off his reelection bid in Florida. Where do you stand? What issues will affect your vote in 2020? Give us a call. We'll get to your calls after the break. Here on the Florida Roundup, the number to join the show is 305-995-1800. And send those tweets to @FloridaRoundup. Lots to talk about still. Hang with us. It's the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. President Trump's push for reelection is officially underway. The campaign is beefing up its infrastructure here in Florida because so much is on the line here in the Sunshine State. But as he eyes a second term in the White House, the president remains certainly a lightning rod. And we heard from some of his critics and supporters this week outside his campaign announcement in Orlando.
I'm so excited. Thank God for President Trump. In the nick of time, he's saving America.
Yeah, I don't agree with what he's doing, how he is, how he acts as a president. I don't think he acts presidential.
Now, that was Chad Lewis and Jennifer Patil, both interviewed Tuesday outside the Amway Center in Orlando before the president spoke, articulating the divisions in this country in two quick sound bites right there. And we want to know what you think. We'll go to your calls in a moment on the Florida Roundup at 305-995-1800. Tweets coming into the Florida Roundup as well as we continue the conversation with Matthew Petty, news director at WMFE. Matthew, a huge crowd around the Amway Center for the president's kickoff. Protests outside set the scene for us as your reporters were there. There were a few people thrown out of the rally as well, but Orlando was the place to be this week in the political world. Tell us what you saw and observed.
Yeah, it certainly was the place to be. I mean, there was some anticipation, of course, leading up to the rally itself after he made that announcement. A little bit of head-scratching, why Orlando? But I think, you know, pundits have pointed out that it kind of makes sense. Like, Florida is a hugely important state for the president to win if he is to win re-election. So that kind of is the reason for that. And then geographically, too, I mean, the fact that Orlando is central to the state, supporters can come from all over the state to see the president speak. And that's what we saw, too. Our reporters speaking to folks out in the crowd. I think one of the people we heard from just a moment ago had made the trip up from South Florida. So a lot of people showed up early. They lined up, you know, beginning in the early hours of Monday. They had sort of tents. They had people waiting in line and taking turns. They'd booked hotel rooms. There was kind of a festival outside the Amway Arena as well, the Trump 45 Fest going on all day on Tuesday. Pretty festive atmosphere there. And, of course, there were protests as well. Protests were kind of corralled a few blocks away from the Amway Center. Very strong police presence, and our reporters sort of out and about during Tuesday through the afternoon and evening. You know, they told us that essentially the police did a pretty good job of keeping those two groups separated. So you didn't see too much sort of interaction between the two groups there.
Matthew, the president could have chosen other battleground states that were successful for him in 2016, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, any place in kind of the industrial Midwest, certainly, that that he made a case for back in 2016. But he did come to Florida. The Democratic presidential hopefuls, 20 of them, are starting their debate schedule in South Florida next week. What is the Trump support like in Central Florida, in that key piece of the state along that I-4 corridor? What's it been like over the last 3 years of his presidency?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It kind of depends on who you talk to. I mean, there are a lot of folks, I think, on the Republican Party who may not agree with some of the presentation of the president, but they're happy, of course, that there's a Republican president in the White House. You also have to try and sort of separate a little bit the rhetoric, you know, what you see on Twitter in the early hours and what's actually happened. Like, in some ways, not a lot has changed. Like, some of the policies have been pretty conservative in terms of, you know, this president supporting tax cuts, appointing conservative justices and the like. And then you have the other things that you see on Twitter, and you have to kind of try and mm-hmm. make a distinction between the two. So you hear a little bit of that when you talk to Republicans in Central Florida. You know, there are some things they don't agree with the president on. There are some policy issues they think, you know, he's heading in the right direction. So, yeah, it's a question that really depends on who you're talking to.
Speaking of Twitter, lots of tweets coming into the Florida Roundup from listeners around the state. Here's one from Nick. I did not vote for Donald J. Trump. I am from New York and I am Puerto Rican. The level of corruption Trump brings to the table is unacceptable and unprecedented. That brings up what will certainly be a big campaign issue for 2020. As Democrats, of course, will try to make this a referendum on the president and allegations of corruption. Meanwhile, we want to know what you think. Give us a call here on the Florida Roundup. It's 305-995-1800. Mark is an independent voter in Coconut Grove. Hey, Mark, happy Friday. You're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call and my comments.
Sure.
I just wanted to put this out there from an independent that did not vote for Trump and was actually rather repulsed by him in 2016. But now I have the next election looming, and it's looking like my options are going to be both extremes on left and right. On the left being socialism, where people like AOC and Sanders are actually on that platform. And then on the right, the other extreme, which is identity racism, I guess, or nationalism, a person that's not actually, and it could be argued, but to me, it's not actually running on that platform, but is being painted that way, not unreasonably. And it's a horrible choice. But it's a choice that leans in a direction.
Well, let me ask you then, Mark, who do you think will get your vote? And let me ask you as well, a Quinnipiac poll showed a more moderate Democrat, Joe Biden, beating Donald Trump in Florida, although you got to take those polls with a grain of salt because this state usually is a very tight election for presidential cycles. What if a more moderate Democrat opposes this president? Would that person get your vote as an independent voter or not?
Absolutely. They have 100 times more chance than an AOC. I mean, not that AOC's running, but an AOC, a person that goes that direction like Sanders, but is an avowed socialist. If the person was a good candidate, which, let me tell you, holding a moderate Democrat to Trump, it's not a hard sell. I mean, it really isn't a hard sell to people like me.
And let's be clear, Bernie Sanders is certainly far to the left of where you are and where a lot of Americans are. But he's not an avowed socialist. He's a democratic socialist. He supports more taxpayer dollars going toward government programs rather than, full governmental control over the means of production, let's say. But I hear what you're saying, and I want to ask Matthew Petty about that. As we, you know, the independents like Mark, Matthew, the swing voters, they are decisive in this state, particularly in this state. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of independents, which make up more than 25% of the total voters, they perceive two unappealing choices. And so how do you see that driving the campaigns as they are going to just blast Florida with appearances and ads and a lot of attention?
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting point. I mean, the thing is, independent voters we've talked to ahead of at least President Trump's appearance in Orlando, one of the things we heard was they want to hear him sort of tone down some of the rhetoric, some of the things that you'll hear him say at campaign rallies, but then maybe not in his speeches from the White House. And if that were to happen, then he may be a more palatable candidate for some independents. On the other hand, I think the Democrats, they have this kind of conundrum, and they have a lot of candidates to pick from the primary, right? They have like 23 or something. You're going to see those candidates on stage down in Miami. The party moves to Miami next week. So good luck dealing with that, Tom, and your crew. But the thing is that
it's like you're going to be wrangling 10,000 candidates. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I think the question there for the Democratic Party is, what direction do they go in? Do they go with a candidate like Joe Biden, who's well known to voters, who is polling pretty well by all accounts at this stage anyway? Or do they sort of say, look, we've heard from our base, and our base is saying we want something different. We want a new voice. We want, we want somebody who's kind of going to bring in new voters, maybe appeal to some of those independents, some of those people who may have even voted Republican last time and are looking for something different now. It's a challenge for the Democratic Party, to be sure.
We got a text here from Butterfly McGrew writes us, who'll get my vote? Whoever wins the Democratic primary. It'll be a bit of a challenge if it's Biden, the tweeter writes, as I'll be wielding the voting pen with one hand, holding my nose with the other. Sounds like a anybody but Trump kind of supporter there. But regardless, it is the same Twitter handle at Florida Roundup and the same phone number, regardless of your political persuasion, 305-995-1800 across the state. Talking about politics, the president announcing officially his reelection campaign underway in Orlando this week. Democrats come to the state to begin their debating schedule next week. And let's stay in South Florida. Hialeah Lewis on line four. Lewis, thanks for holding on. You are a supporter of the president.
Yeah, Lewis from Hialeah here, self-appointed representative of We the People.
Okay, Lewis, what has your support there for the president? Did you vote for him 4 years ago?
Oh yeah, no, I definitely voted for him. I'm really happy that somebody that is not an inside politician is actually at the helm doing things according to sound business practices.
Are you registered with either party, Lewis?
I'm independent.
Independent. So you are one of those great swing voters, at least by your voter registration. And you've already made up your mind for 2020, huh?
Oh, yeah, man. I was gonna move to Central America if Hillary had won.
Hmm. Lewis from Hialeah, certainly a strong Trump supporter there for us. Matthew Petty with WMFE in Orlando is along with us. You know, how this campaign, the Trump campaign, runs in Florida is nuanced by the significant differences in the state and in the state mm-hmm. politics, and obviously in kind of what makes up the registered voters. In 2016, there was some significant questions about Puerto Ricans who had come into the continental United States, who are citizens and voters, but they left after Hurricane Maria, and whether or not that would kind of throw an election in 2018, and then obviously what the influence could be in 2020. How is that shaping up, especially after the experience in the midterm elections?
Yeah, I think there's the jury is still out a little bit on that. I mean, one thing to think about it is the kind of outreach there is for voters whose first language is not English, right? I mean, there's been that effort in Florida, at least, to try and make voting materials available in Spanish for those voters, including folks who've moved recently from Puerto Rico in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria. I think Democrats might have been hoping for a significant bump from that in 2018. We didn't see that. You know, it could be that some of those new voters are still kind of getting to grips with the system here and trying to figure out, you know, what the candidates are about. So, there may be still some questions over that. There is another issue, too, of course, which is, you know, how does the Democratic Party in Florida turn out the voters? Mm-hmm. Because last year we saw a candidate who, for the governor, you know, and Andrew Gillum, who by all accounts was a pretty exciting young candidate, supposedly a lot of energy there. We did see a lot of energy there. But then for some reason, that just didn't translate into votes at the ballot box. So again, sort of coming back to the Democratic Party in Florida in this massive sprawling state, a very purple state in many ways, you know, how does the Democratic Party energize their voting base?
Yeah. And we've heard you see Gillum turning all of his attention now to improving Democratic turnout mm-hmm. in 2020. Do you think that his effort will be successful or not?
Yeah, that's another question. It just kind of depends on who you ask. I mean, if you look at some of the flack he's getting from folks on the Republican side, they're basically saying you should not be, talking right now because you lost the gubernatorial election there. It is a big question. It also, of course, depends on who the candidates are for president and vice president. I mean, if it happens to be Biden, who does he pick for his running mate? That's going to be a critical issue for the Republicans. I just wanted to circle back to a point that our caller Lewis made earlier. He sounds like he's pretty entrenched. I mean, he was saying he was going to move to Central America if Hillary Clinton had won in 2016, but he mentioned sound business practices. And I just wanted to come back to a point that, there may be a question about that because in some regards, this president has kind of shaken things up. If you look at sort of NAFTA and what's going on there, a lot of issues on the table. And if you kind of try and match up what's going on policy-wise with what voters are hearing, sometimes there's a bit of daylight between those two things.
Mm. Yeah. And let me just let all our listeners know, you're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Judging by the tweets, anybody but Trump is winning the Twitter primary. Here's a tweet from Linda. In addition to the corruption and general embarrassment of Trump being president, my biggest concern is his deliberate focus on consolidating his power by not filling top positions. At the White House, there are an unprecedented number of acting cabinet secretaries and other acting officials. They don't have to go through Senate confirmation. That has been criticized. Here's Richard in Gainesville tweeting the Florida Roundup. As a teacher of American history and government for 48 years, I can confidently say Trump is the least informed, most dangerous president in our history. I will vote for whomever the Democrats nominate, as that person will be an infinite improvement over Trump. However, let's talk about the fact that we're getting lots of tweets, but also lots of calls and some supporters for the president coming in on the phone lines. Alan is in Orlando. Hey, Alan, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, thank you. So let me start with this. I'm not a huge supporter of Trump at all, not like some of the people have called in. He's certainly a perfect example of Hollywood does not work out in real life sometimes. However, I cannot support a lot of these people that are running on the far left. You know, everyone's using this democratic socialist, a democratic socialist society is also in Venezuela. And I can't support that. I'm not saying things don't need to be.
I hear what you're saying, but to be clear, Venezuela's form of government is different than what you'd see in a Scandinavian country, which more generously funds
somewhere.
Social programs.
Right.
So, but I hear your point that you're concerned that the Democratic nominee will be too far to the left for you, right?
They wouldn't like Kennedy right now. I mean, they are so far to the left on their agendas, and you know, the opposite could be said for the right. I mean, like I said, I'm a more media of the road. You know, I'm an issues person. I'm certainly not a party person, but I just can't get behind. You know, as bad as Trump is for us. To me, is as bad as AOC is for the Democrats, but they love her. You know, I mean,
but she's not running. But who would you vote for? Do you think in 2020, no matter who they nominate, who do you think
it'll
vote
be?
For?
Whoever the Republican side is, it'll be the president. I mean, unless
you'll
something
vote for
comes
President
up
Trump,
unless he can't run because they do something as far as impeachment, I don't think it'll happen as fast enough. But
okay,
not
Alan.
Voting is a vote for the opposite side, and I just can't do it for the Democrats. I just can't.
Thanks for that. That's Alan in Orlando, Matthew Petty. This is interesting, if unscientific, feedback from Florida voters about them weighing their options. For some Floridians, they're shying away from voting for the Democrats because they perceive that they are too far to the left. Interesting to get some of that feedback on the lines.
Yeah, it certainly is. You know, next week, I guess, could be a moment of clarity, so to speak. We may see some more clarity around who the front runner may be on the Democratic side. Sometimes it's a little hard to tell. I mean, remember the last time we had a really crowded field of primary candidates, which was in the lead up to 2016 on the Republican side. And that kind of didn't go how pundits thought it might and how a lot of the, political reporters thought it might. So, next week is certainly going to be interesting from people sort of looking to still try and make a choice, you know, whether it's our listener just now, Alan, who's saying he just cannot vote for anyone on the Democratic side, or maybe others who are maybe a little more middle of the road and saying there are some candidates on the left who we can't go for, but maybe some more in the middle.
Matthew Petty with WMFE. Stick with us. Your phone calls as well, 305-995-1800. What's the issue grabbing your vote for 2020? It's next. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. As we continue to take your calls and tweets from all over the state, looking back at President Trump's re-election kickoff rally in Orlando Tuesday night, getting so much feedback from all of you. It is the hottest of political topics. Of course, here is a tweet from Gregory. Reacting to some earlier callers on the show, he says, Elizabeth Warren and most of the Democrats that are running are not Democratic socialists. Most believe and know how important the free market is. Thanks for that feedback. And let's go now to Lisa in Clearwater. She's on the line. Hey, Lisa, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I just want to say I'm just so incredibly disappointed in the Republican Party. I was a Republican voter back when they were fiscally responsible, when they weren't what they are now. I feel like they have just gone. They're not even right. They're off the reservation. They're not fiscally responsible. They're not involved with what happens at grassroots, which is how they got us. They're not involved with blue-collar workers. This administration just blatantly shows us daily they do not care about individuals. They only care about money and centering his power. I just don't understand.
Let me ask you then, Lisa, if you feel the GOP has left you, who will get your vote next year?
Personally, I like Elizabeth Warren. I think she is knowledgeable. She's educated. She's been on this since before she was in office. She has policy and plans in place. And the other thing that upsets me is somebody would call her a socialist. And somebody that would call her a socialist does not understand social issues. They don't understand that capitalism requires a conscience, which is our social program. We can't let capitalism run amok. We get what we have now, which is Donald Trump.
Thanks for your call, Lisa. Matthew Petty, you know, there are Republicans in Florida, like the one we just heard, who have either become no party affiliated or have drifted away from the GOP in recent years because it is not the party it used to be, largely due to this presidency. Donald Trump, I think most political analysts would agree, has pulled the GOP over to where he is, which is a much more populist, nativist party than it used to be. What about that aspect of 2020?
That is an interesting question, because essentially what we're asking is, you know, how much has President Donald Trump changed the Republican Party? Has he really changed it? Is this a temporary thing? Is this going to last beyond his presidency? And we heard some tape from earlier where there were maybe some questions raised about just how long that term might be. He was saying he was joking. He was going to joke that it would might be 10 years from now. But not, nonetheless, I mean, the question is, like, is President Donald Trump an anomaly, or is he really a sign of how the Republican Party is going? So there's kind of a question there for the Republicans to sort out, just as the Democrats have a question to sort out on their side. You know, what is the shape of the party down the track? What kind of Democratic Party are they going to be as well?
You know, I'm curious about this socialist title that has been tagged to some of those in the Democratic Party, and certainly the Republicans have been freewheeling that tag around. We saw it in the Democratic primaries with Bernie Sanders in 2016, for instance. That has a certain tone here in South Florida. I'm in Miami. And so, you know, the Cuban population, the Venezuelan population, folks from socialist governed countries with lots of corruption have come to South Florida, have now made their lives in South Florida, have become citizens in many cases, and of course are voters. And so that tag, Matthew, socialist in South Florida, has certain connotations. So I'm wondering how that resonates in Central Florida, and Melissa, for that matter, in North Florida as well, and kind of how do those likely voters, not only in the primary, but the swing voters, how are they going to hear that in various pieces of the peninsula?
We just got a tweet about it. Let me read it quickly. Say socialism and it spooks the baby boomers. Detail individual plans by candidates and the fear vanishes, a listener tweeted. But, you know, when you look at the polling on this, guys, older voters are definitely sensitive to that word. Younger voters, much less so. It's interesting to look at the breakdown in age. Matthew. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, we saw some of the folks that Tom was referring to, people who have come from Venezuela, seen the kind of level of corruption and chaos going on in that country. And for them, certainly the word socialism has some very negative connotations. Like, in fact, just outside the rally on Tuesday, there was a group who had sort of flags kind of touting their support for this president and the Republican Party because they're pretty concerned about what's going on in their home country, and obviously concerned that that kind of that style of socialism doesn't come to the United States. On the other hand, of course, if you were to go up to Vermont where and listen to folks who are supporters of Bernie Sanders or anywhere in the country and hear him kind of talk about the more nuanced sort of socialism he's talking about, that word does not have those connotations. So again, it kind of depends on where you are and who you're talking to.
Yeah, and sometimes who your neighbors are and what your experience has been in your communities here in Florida. 305-995-1800 is the phone number. At Florida Roundup is where you can find us on Twitter. Ocala in North Central Florida. Patrick on line 8, you're up next. Thanks for holding on, Patrick. You're on the radio.
Hello. My concern, I'm a Democrat. I did not vote for Trump. I've never voted for a Republican for president. I am also an extremely strong supporter of Second Amendment rights, and I'm absolutely ashamed of the Democratic Party's stand on the Bill of Rights, basically. They ignore it, they abridge it, they infringe it. So I'm in a situation where there's no way I could vote for Trump, but I can't vote for somebody who says that they're going to take away my rights to address what a infinitesimal tiny portion of the population do to the rest of us, who basically, if they pass gun control, it's not going to stop the crazies, the murderers, and the sickos who attack us. That it's, we need programs that deal with economic injustice and things like that, and that would eliminate the ills that cause all these copycats to run around trying to make themselves famous by attacking us.
Patrick, really good perspective there from Ocala. Thanks for sharing it with us. You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Matthew Petty, guns is certainly a significant issue for Many voters in Orlando, where you are, that has been brought forth certainly because of the Pulse tragedy with that anniversary recently passing. And, of course, here in South Florida with the Parkland tragedy. And, Melissa, where you are in Jacksonville, there was the shooting on a Sunday afternoon last fall, for instance. And so, you know, Patrick has an interesting point about that particular issue shaping his political philosophy and how he doesn't feel he's got a candidate right now because of how he feels about President Trump and how he feels about the Democratic Party writ large and its stance on gun control. What are the issues, Matthew, do you think that are going to be resonating along that I-4 corridor?
Well, I can tell you one of the issues we saw a lot of signs waving around about on Tuesday is family separation, which kind of speaks to one of the most polarizing aspects of the situation at the southern border and how this administration is kind of going about, talking about and enforcing its vision for immigration. So immigration is going to be a big deal. I think that would be the case wherever you are in Florida, whatever community you're talking to, that's definitely going to be a big one. Economics, of course. I mean, it always comes back to how much money people have in their pocketbooks and, you know, how confident they are they're going to be able to pay the bills. And in some regards, if you look at folks who are supporting the president, they'll say, well, look, he's given us tax cuts. There's a little more money in the paycheck this, you know, from month to month. So I'm pretty comfortable despite all of the other things I may not be so comfortable with to say I can go ahead and support this president. I would love to be able to ask our just caller just now, Patrick, whether he is going to sit out this election. I mean, it'll be fascinating to know sort of how some of these voters actually go ahead and vote.
It's interesting to hear the real anguish in folks' voices calling in. They're anguished about their choice and their vote. They're agonizing over this, particularly independent voters who are not predisposed to like this president, but they're not necessarily going to vote for the Democrat. You know, Matthew, before we let you go, no matter how people vote, this is going to be an incredibly high turnout election. We are 500 days out, and it's going to be a long slog, but some predictions of up to 70% turnout. We're going to be seeing a lot of long lines here in Florida. And, of course, the eyes of the world will be on our election systems once again.
Right, indeed. Hopefully those voting machines don't break down this time.
Yeah. I mean, think of the job of the supervisors of elections for this next cycle. It's going to be really intense.
You know, I think one place we're going to see perhaps some changes is the amount of mail-in ballot, what we used to call absentee voting, and certainly early voting. Because of the trouble with tabulation on election night and certainly here in South Florida with the recounts and looking at the ballots, I think folks are going to say, you know, perhaps they may feel their ballot is more secure voting by mail if they're able to kind of trace that ballot after they send it back in to make sure it's been received.
Mm-hmm. But there's also the issue of signatures, right? I mean, the signature matching issue seemed to be a big deal. So on the other hand, you might have folks who say, I don't trust what's going to happen. I don't trust the mail service. I'm going to show up and make sure I vote in person because that's the only way to do it.
And demand a paper ballot, which is less of an issue in Florida, but it's certainly been a big issue in some other states. And you're absolutely right. There are ongoing concerns about election security, which we've talked about on this show and we'll continue to talk about. But Matthew Petty, after a very busy news week covering that kickoff in Orlando, we so appreciate you joining us. Matthew Petty, news director at WMFE in Orlando, on the line with us here this Friday. Thanks a lot, Matthew.
You're welcome.
And that's our show for today. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, also our technical director this hour. WLRN's Director of Radio Operations is Peter Meritz. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. Thanks to all our callers. Sorry we couldn't get to all of you, and the tweeters as well. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next Friday at noon. Have a great weekend.